Look at that. It is. Wow. Somebody just decided, it's not going to be that good today. We'll mute it today. I think I hit that button. Actually, the mute was right when I got it. What I was saying is the song poses an interesting question, and the question being, what do we do when the waters rise? What do we do when life gets big? I tend to think that our true beliefs, I'm not even sure we know them until life gets hard. I sort of think that's what belief is all about. That's what faith, and I'm not sure there's a difference, but faith really is what happens when things get too big for me to handle. What happens when things don't go according to plan? What do I do then? Do I still practice what I've been practicing? Do I still say the things I've been saying, believe the things I've been believing, or do I get rid of all of that and start on a new path? You remember, as I do, several years ago, the Columbine incident. Very dark part of our nation's history. Cassie Bernal was killed for her faith in that incident because she claimed to be a follower of Jesus. Michael W. Smith wrote a song about that whole incident. Some of you know this song. Here's some of the lyrics. It was a test we could all hope to pass, but none of us would want to take. Faced with the choice to deny God to live, for her there was one choice to make. This was her time. This was her dance. She lived every moment, left nothing to chance. She swam in the sea, drank from the deep, embraced the mystery of all she could be. This was her time. And it goes a little bridge, asks this question. What if tomorrow and what if today, faced with the question, oh, what would you say? What if today, tomorrow, some point in your life, you face that sort of situation? Would you have the faith, would you have the courage, would you have the strength to answer the way she did? We're going to wrap up our series on Old Testament stories that we've called Once Upon a Time today. And we're going to wrap it up with the story of a guy named Daniel. A guy whose story is all about what I've just been talking about. It's about what are you going to do when life gets big, when life gets hard. Now, interestingly enough, Daniel's story is found in the book of Daniel. It's nice how the Bible works out that way. Daniel's a little more tricky to find than the other books. We've been sort of close to the beginning. Daniel's in the second part of the Old Testament. So Psalms is in the middle. Go to the right. Go through Isaiah and Jeremiah and past Ezekiel, and then you'll get to Daniel. I'll give you a few minutes to kind of find it because it is a little tricky to find. It's a smaller book among some of the larger ones back there in the second half. Let me catch you up on what's happened chronologically. Last week, we talked about David and Goliath, right? That epic battle. David becomes king. David has, for the most part, a very successful reign as king. David dies. His son Solomon eventually comes to the throne. After Solomon, the nation of Israel divides. There's a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom eventually is destroyed. It goes away, never to return. The southern kingdom, which is called Judah in the Bible, struggles for a while. It struggles with obedience. It struggles through leaders. It struggles through conflicts until eventually it is destroyed for the most part, and all of its inhabitants are carried away into captivity. They're prisoners of war, essentially. They're taken away to a place at the time called Babylon. When the book opens, when Daniel opens chapter 1, the king is a guy by the name of Nebuchadnezzar, and he has come in, his army has come in, and has taken certain people away back to Babylon. Eventually, everybody's carried away into captivity. One of the people that gets taken away is this guy we're going to study. It's a guy by the name of Daniel. Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Another familiar story to some of us. They're all taken away. Now, here's the problem for the nation. Israel has, up until this point, since its forming, they've thought of themselves, and rightly so, they've considered, hey, we're God's people. That's us. We're the chosen ones. This is how they speak of themselves. And they speak of themselves that way because God speaks of them that way. You are my people. You are the chosen ones. The problem with that language, however, was they began to think that, you know what, nothing bad could ever happen to us. We're God's people. And nobody could ever hurt us. God would never let anything bad happen to us. We're God's people. And then all of a sudden, because of their disobedience, because they worship false gods, because they weren't on the side of justice, because they became oppressors in some ways, God steps in and says, look, even my people have to play by the rules. Even my people have to obey. And so I'm going to allow you to be captured. And so suddenly, when we get to Daniel 6, all of God's people are captives in this other place. And it's very confusing because now their sense of identity is gone. Their sense of how do we relate to God is gone. Their sense of who are we and who are we going to be? There's all of these identity questions that have now been crushed by the people. And the question of Daniel is, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do now that life hasn't gone the way we thought it was going to go? This is one of the major lessons of the book of Daniel. How do you respond when life doesn't work out the way you thought it should? How do you respond when things don't go according to plan? Daniel chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. It pleased Darius, he's now the king. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three presidents, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. So these were trusted people. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other presidents and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole region. All throughout Daniel's story, from beginning all the way to the end, here's one of the things I think Daniel teaches us. Just because the circumstances change doesn't mean you have to change. I think this is a theme of Daniel's life. Just because the circumstances change, it doesn't mean that you have to be different. Okay, I'm not talking about being inflexible are not making necessary changes in your life. I'm talking about who you are on the inside, who you are on the core, the inner person, what we would call your character, your spirit, however you refer to that inner person, the real you. Things can change all around you. Circumstances can change all around you. Some of them are going to be positive. Some of them are not going to be positive. Some of them are going to be difficult. Some of them are going to be great. But regardless of how the circumstances, how the environment changes around you, you as a person don't have to change. You don't have to change. Daniel goes to this new place. He has to learn a new culture. He has to learn a new language. He has to, according to chapter 1, he has to read all of the literature and all of the history of this new place where he's been kidnapped, essentially. He has to process all of that. He has to learn all of that. And yet, who Daniel is as a man, who Daniel is as a follower of God, never, ever changes. Here's why I think that is. I think Daniel had decided, look, there's some non-negotiables in me. There's some things I'm not going to give up. There's some areas of my life I'm not going to bend on. Let me give you two non-negotiables in Daniel's life. One was Daniel's commitment to personal excellence. This was non-negotiable for Daniel. When we meet Daniel in Daniel chapter 1, we find that Daniel distinguishes himself above all the other people that are in the king's court. The king and the king's leaders recognize there is something about this guy. He works hard. He's intelligent. We learn from Daniel chapter 1, he was disciplined. He was healthy, right? He took care of himself. Now, If you had been kidnapped from your home, basically, taken to a foreign land, dropped down there, and ordered to do certain things, we could understand it if you had somewhat of an emotional meltdown at that point. I mean, we could give you that. We could understand. Man, it'd be tough to overcome that. But for Daniel, Daniel had decided, doesn't matter whether I'm home, doesn't matter whether I'm in Babylon, doesn't matter who's the king, doesn't matter where I am, there's a certain way that I live. And it doesn't matter who's in charge. And I'll learn your language, and I'll read your history, and I'll learn your literature, and I'll learn your customs, and I'll learn your culture. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to be committed to me and to my God. I'm still going to be faithful. I'm still going to be the man that I've always been. So whatever environment he found himself in, Daniel distinguishes himself. We get to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel is still doing that. Daniel is still catching the attention of the people who are around him just because of his commitment to do his best wherever he is, to be everything that he can possibly be regardless of the environment that he finds himself in. And I would say it's not just in his discipline. It's not just in his habits. It's in the person that he is. Daniel chapter 6 says he distinguished himself because of the spirit that was within him. There was just something about Daniel that everybody took notice of. And maybe you've been around people like that. Yes, they're smart. Yes, they're good at their job. Yes, they always give their absolute best. They give 110%. But besides all of that, above all of that, there's just something about them. There's an attitude. There's a spirit. There's something. You just say, that guy's different. This is the way Daniel was. And again, it didn't matter what his circumstances were. It didn't matter what his environment was, who was in charge. He just lived out these attributes wherever he was. Now, some of us are here, and there's a lot about the place you work that you wish were different. There's a lot about your boss that you wish you could change. There's a lot about your coworkers that if you were God for the day, right, you'd go, poof, right? Be gone, all right? Or change, right? I mean, there's, in our environment that we're in, all of us have those people and those circumstances that we wish, I just wish this were different. I just wish this were different. I just wish this would change. If it never changes, if it never improves, you can still be the person God has made you to be, even in that environment. You can still excel personally, spiritually, regardless of who you work with. Some of us are in imperfect marriages. As a matter of fact, the only ones who aren't are the single people, right? They're the only ones who aren't in an imperfect marriage this morning. If you're married, newsflash, you're in an imperfect marriage. Your spouse knows it whether you know it or not, okay? But some, seriously, some are here this morning and there's like a lot of tension in the home. Right? There's like, you have this list. Again, same thing. God for the day, you would look at your spouse and say, I would change this and this and this and this and this. Okay, I'm not saying that's the way we should approach marriage, but in the back of our minds, a lot of us are like that. I just wish all of this would be different. And I think one of the things Daniel says to us is you can still distinguish yourself even if the marriage isn't perfect. You can still be the spouse God has called you to be. Your environment and even your spouse and even the condition of your marriage is not an excuse for you to stop being the spouse God's called you to be. Students are getting ready to go back to school, right? We're excited about that. Some are maybe already back. Look at the excitement on their faces. They're giddy with excitement. Yeah. Yeah. Students, can I tell you something? Personal excellence, being the absolute best student you can be over the next 9 months, when you turn in something that it's 110% of what you have to give, and not 40. You know, that project that should have taken an hour and you spent 5 minutes on it on the internet last night and printed it off and turned it in. Can I just tell you something? Not because I'm teaching now. I would have said this before I was teaching. That's a spiritual issue. If you're a follower of Jesus, it's a spiritual issue as to the quality of work that you do for your teachers, for your employers. The work that you do on a daily basis for your boss that you get a paycheck for, this is a spiritual issue. See, Daniel did a whole lot of stuff that we would look at, serving the king, translating languages, reading. We'd look at all that and say, well, that's not really spiritual. Daniel would say, oh, yeah, it is. Because this is a reflection of me, and I am a reflection of God. And when people look at me, I want them to see the excellence of God. I want them to see the perfection as close as I can get to it, and I can't get all the way there, but as close as I can get to it, when people look at me, I want them to see the excellence of God. Daniel was committed to this, and it didn't matter who was king, and it didn't matter who was in his environment or who he was working with. Daniel was going to be Daniel. God bless you. Some of you, I mentioned married, some of you are single. And it's your heart for God to bring that person into your life, for you to be married. It's your desire that God would bring that person into your life. And I pray that he does, and I pray that that happens in your life. But I can tell you, in the meantime, God still has plans for you. God still has a calling on your life. Your calling is not just hang around till you get married. That's not God's calling on your life. He has calling for you right now. And he wants you to pursue that. And we pray that the marriage thing is going to come, that God's going to work that out, that God is in the process of working that out. But until that moment, distinguish yourself because of the way you live your life. Paul would say it this way later on in Colossians. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Whatever you do, you sell cars, you sell insurance, you work for Coca-Cola, IBM, you take a history test, whatever you do, Paul says, give it all. As if this was for God. As if you are working for, studying for, living for God. Be an example to the rest of the world that, you know what, this is how someone who loves God and follows God, this is how they live their life. This is their work ethic. This is their approach to all of life. Paul says, live that way. And Daniel, I think, would agree with that, because wherever Daniel went, this is the way he approached life. Daniel didn't seem, now maybe in his private moments he did, but from what we know about Daniel, it doesn't seem that Daniel ever sat around and said, well, it's just not fair. Right? Where is the justice that I get taken from my home to this other place that I don't even want to be in? Where is the fairness? I have been treated unfairly. It doesn't appear that Daniel ever does that. Now, maybe he had a right to do that. He never does. He never sulks. He never has a pity party. Daniel seems to wake up every day and say, okay, this is where I am. These are my circumstances. How would God want me to live today? What would God want me to do today, whether my circumstances change or not? Some of you have heard the phrase, bloom where you're planted. I think this was Daniel's approach to life. Look, I'm here. I'm in Babylon. I can't go back home. I can't go back to, this is where I am. What does God want me to do right here? It's important to remember that this wasn't like a weekend, right? It wasn't like Daniel got carried away. 2 weeks later, he comes back. He was so faithful for 2 whole weeks. Yay, Daniel. It wasn't that at all. Anybody have a guess? When we get to Daniel chapter 6, we're headed to the lion's den, by the way. When we get to Daniel 6, anybody have a guess as to how old Daniel was? Anybody remember this from the story? He's 80 years old. Now, I know from all the coloring books when we were kids, and like the flannel graph, Daniel was like 18, right? He just got his driver's license, and this is Daniel, and he goes in the line and said, no, Daniel's gray hair, beard, wrinkles. He's 80 years old. Daniel's taken from his home as a teenager. It's been 60 plus years, day after day, day after day. Circumstances aren't what he wanted them to be, aren't what he thought they'd be, not the way he planned out his life. And day after day after day, Daniel's faithful. It's the way we got to be. And it may be 6 hours, and it may be 6 days, and it may be 60 years that God says, just live for me, just live for me, just live for me, just live for me. That's the other non-negotiable, not just his personal excellence, not that he would get up every day and he would give 100% of what he had to whatever he was doing, but number two, his obedience to God was non-negotiable. And this really is what the story boils down to. Daniel says, look, I'm going to obey God. I'm going to do it every day. And I'm going to do it in every single situation. And anytime there's a question, anytime I've got to make a decision, I'm going to obey God. And you can pick the king, and you can pick the language, and you can pick the culture, and you can tell me where I've got to sleep. But I will obey God. And I draw the line right there. Verse 4. Then the presidents and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful. And no error or fault was found in him. Then the men said, we shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. So politics and office jealousies and personal immaturity weigh into the story here. And all of these other people that Daniel worked with are now jealous that he's getting this promotion. Jealous that he's caught the eye of the king. And they begin to find ways to sort of bring him down. A wonderful lesson in integrity here. The more they looked, the less they found, right? Okay, we're gonna catch him. We're gonna accuse him. No, can't do that. We're gonna say he did. No, can't do that. We're gonna tell the king. No, Daniel's life was such a life of integrity that there was absolutely nothing they could say, which is exactly how we're to live, right? We're to live in holiness and faithfulness and righteousness and integrity of heart so that those who would accuse us can't find anything to say, nothing to accuse us of. Now, lest we think that good deeds don't go unpunished, these guys figure out a plan. They figure out, this is what we'll do. We'll use Daniel's faith against him. We'll use his belief. We'll use that very commitment against Daniel with the king. Look at verse 6. Then these presidents and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and the injunction. Now, Darius, for the most part, is pictured as a decent guy. As an all-around good guy. I mean, he saw Daniel, allowed Daniel to advance in the kingdom even though he was a Hebrew. Darius is, for the most part, a really good guy, but he's not above flattery. Especially in a day and age where kingships were tenuous at best. When on any given day, someone could attempt to overthrow the king. I mean, a little sign of loyalty, a little everybody praise me for 30 days, is not such a bad idea to Darius at this time. Which, as I was reading back through this, it just reminded me that flattery is such a tricky thing, isn't it? Now, I mean, it's a subtle danger because the reality is I'm a lot like Darius. I like praise, right? I like flattery. You're welcome to tell me how wonderful I am anytime. That's okay. That would be fine. It'd be okay. You could put it in writing. That'd be fine, too, if you didn't want to just come out and say it. We all sort of have that side, don't we? That, to be noticed, to be flattered, to be talked about, to be praised. And there's nothing wrong to be praised. We should encourage one another. We should say, hey, you did a good job. Hey, this is good. I appreciate this about. We should always say that. But Darius reminds us that there's blind spots when it comes to that. There's danger in believing our own press, right? There's danger because for Darius, he did not have the objectivity to see the trap that was being set in the midst of all this flattery, right? He lost his ability to be objective, to say, wait a minute, let me think about this. Because people are just telling me he's wonderful. Oh, you're great. Oh, you're fabulous. You're the best. That's a dangerous place to be, especially when you start actually believing that, that you really are all that great. And you're probably a great person, but sometimes we're not as great as our PR suggests, right? We're not as great as the advertising suggests. And if we begin to believe that, we open ourselves up to all kinds of dangers. This is Darius's problem. He's not able to see the trap because he's listening to the applause, right? Yay me. I'm so good. I am so great. This is a great idea. In verse 10, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Now this really is the high point of the story. This is the crux. And the lion's den is coming. But the lion's den really is a result of this decision in Daniel's life. If Daniel makes another decision at this critical moment, there's no lion's den to worry about, right? I mean, this is it. This is the moment where Daniel's fate and the direction of his life gets set. Our lives hinge, they turn on just a few decisions, I would say. There are just a few critical times in our life when we have to say yes or no, and then the rest of our life is just living with the consequences, right? I mean, there's just those few critical moments where we decide, this is how I'm going to live. This is the person I'm going to be. This is where I'm going to be when it comes to integrity. This is where I'm going to be when it comes to purity. And then the rest of our life is managing those consequences. And for some people, they make the wrong decision in those moments and they deal with all kinds of difficult consequences, right? And then some people, like Daniel, say, no, I'm going to make this decision and I'm going to continue making this decision. I'm going to be committed to this decision. And it totally shapes the rest of their life. And I think our heart for teenagers as a church and Randy's as a youth ministers to say to them right now, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, you are making some critical decisions about the person that you are going to be, and all of us old people, we know a misstep in some of those decisions has long-term consequences. Most of us just make a couple of decisions in our life, right? Most of us just make a couple of key decisions about the person we're going to be, and then the rest of our life is just being true to those decisions. This is Daniel. Daniel had decided, this is how I'm going to be, and nobody's going to change that. And his life direction was set by that decision. Another thought from Daniel, even though he'd spent 60 years in Babylon, his heart was still in Jerusalem. He goes upstairs, his windows are open toward Jerusalem because he still remembered his God. Daniel was never fooled into thinking that Babylon was really his home. Daniel never got so comfortable around the king, so comfortable around the other governors that he thought, okay, I'm a Babylonian now. I'm just one of them. No, Daniel always knew his heart, his thought, his allegiance, his faithfulness was to the God of Jerusalem. And so he had his windows open there. I would say just briefly to us, we should really not be that comfortable with the culture of this world. We really shouldn't, okay? We really, as we live, As we go about our business, as we interact, there should be the sense we don't really belong here. This isn't really home. This isn't really who we are. There is a place created by a God who loves us, and that's where our heart longs to be. That's where our heart is committed to. And we live here because He has plans for us, and He wants to work through us, and He wants to use us. But ultimately, our home, our allegiance, our commitment is not to this world. It is to another place entirely. So Daniel goes up to his room and he prays, which is what he's always done. See, in the critical moment, Daniel was practicing the spiritual discipline he'd always practiced. He was just doing what he'd always done in his relationship to God. He didn't have to change anything. He didn't have to suddenly become a person of prayer because now his life was on the line. He didn't suddenly have to figure out, okay, how do I talk to God about this? What do I say to God? What does God think about these circumstances? No, Daniel simply did what he'd always done. He had so developed a spiritual life and spiritual disciplines that when times got hard, he didn't change anything about his spiritual life. Not a thing. As a matter of fact, I would say it this way in your notes. We won't practice in the hard times what we haven't disciplined ourselves to do in the easy times. We won't practice consistently in the hard times what we haven't disciplined ourselves to do in the easy times. I know that some people will say, when my life falls apart, I run to God. And I know there is some truth to that. But generally, if things don't change quickly, you stop running to God or get mad at God. That's generally how people who don't pray until a crisis, that's how their prayer life works. They don't develop the discipline of prayer. They don't understand how to pray. There's no depth to their prayer. They don't know a lot about God and what kind of God He is to be able to pray to Him. So they run to Him in difficult times, and their prayer is basically, God, stop that. Change that. Fix that. And if God doesn't work in about 48 hours, then they're done talking to Him. Because we haven't disciplined ourselves to go to God consistently. This is why athletes do drills, right? NFL training camp started this week, right? All the clubs are in camp by next week. And you hear the interviews. What do all of them say about camp? They love it, right? They live for two-a-days, right? This is like the greatest. It's better than Christmas. They get up, they go into the sweltering heat in Georgia, and they practice. Is this what they say? No, they don't like this time. So why do they do it? Because they know they're going to need these skills in about 6 weeks when they line up to play the game, right? They know they're going to have fine-tuned their plays, their bodies, their minds, their skills, so that when they line up in about 6 weeks, hey, we don't have to think about all of that. We have been drilling that for 6 weeks. We've been going over and over and over. We remembered the stuff we've forgotten. We've learned some new things. Now it's second nature to us how to play this game. This is the way spiritual discipline is. We do it over and over. We do it consistently. We come to God faithfully in His Word, in prayer, in worship, in meditation. All of the spiritual disciplines, we do them consistently so that when life does get big, we're ready. We're okay. We just keep doing. We stay faithful to what we've been doing. And this is what Daniel does. Daniel says, look, I'm just going to do what I've always been doing, which I think it's important to note that Daniel neither hides his discipline nor flaunts his discipline. Neither one. The ruling goes out, and Daniel doesn't say, okay, I got to keep it quiet that I'm a God follower. Okay, I got to downplay it. But Daniel also doesn't stand up and say, hey, everybody look at me. I'm God person. I'm a big spiritual person. I'm a big Christian martyr right here, right here. Everybody look at me. Daniel's not flaunting his spirituality. He's not trying to prove that he's better than anybody else. Jesus said at one point, don't be like the religious leaders who go out to the corner and they pray these loud, repetitious prayers so everybody can hear them. Jesus said, don't be like that. Don't be like that. You go in the privacy of your own home, your own place, and you carry out your spiritual life. Don't flaunt it for everybody to see. Daniel doesn't hide it. Daniel doesn't flaunt it. He's not trying to become a martyr. He's not trying to prove that he's more spiritual than everybody else. Daniel is just being faithful. And in his faithfulness, Daniel turns to God first. Turns to God first. When his accusers go up to the room to catch him, what they hear him doing is asking God for help. Petitioning God. His first reaction is not to go to his friends, although friends can be helpful. His immediate response to trouble and difficulty is not to run here or to run there. His first response when there's trouble is to go to God and say, God, I need help. God, I need you, just like I need you every day. Just like I need you to breathe in and out. God, I need you in this particular circumstance. Daniel's accusers, some of you know the story. They go back to the king and they say, King, you made this law. And Daniel's praying to his God. And Darius realizes he's between a rock and a hard place because he cares for Daniel. But if he strikes down this law, then it undermines his authority. It undermines the entire rule of law for the culture. And so he doesn't know what to do. He takes a little bit of time and he thinks about it. And you realize, I got to hand Daniel over. He says, Daniel, I pray that your God will be with you. He puts Daniel in the lion's den. And it's not Daniel, it's the king who doesn't sleep all night. He's so worried. He's so anxious that the king is up all night wondering what's happening, what's happening, what's happening. First light, the king rushes to the lion's den, rolls the stone away. Look at verse 21. He calls into the lion's den. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king. I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered through the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Jerusalem is in ruins. The temple has been destroyed. God's people, because of their own sin, have been carried away as captives to a foreign land. And in the middle of what is one of the worst stories in the history of the nation of Israel, in the middle of that story, a pagan king is giving glory to the name of God. Pagan king named Darius is declaring in every language, to every king, to every people group, that this God Yahweh is the one true God. The trials that Daniel faced and the trials that you and I face are not just for us. They're not just for us to grow, even though that's a part of it. The trials that you and I face are opportunities for God's glory to be seen by people who are watching our lives. They're opportunities for the name and the renown and the fame of the one true God to be demonstrated to unbelieving people all around us. While God gets glory from our lives when things go well, I believe He does. When we get the pay increase and the new job and the everything works out for us and our kids are obedient and they never get into trouble, and God gets glory from that. God also gets glory when our lives are painful, when the struggles are great, and we walk in faith so that an unbelieving world can look and say, look what their God can do. Look how big their God is. They're not perfect. They don't do everything right, but they believe in God. And even through the darkest moment of their life, through the darkest moment of their lives, God has sustained them. Our trials, much like the trial of David that we studied last week in his battle with Goliath, are opportunities for God to make Himself known in a powerful way to the people around us. Now, in all of these stories, the stories that we talked about and other stories that we didn't talk about in this series, God is saying to us, saying to the people who are in the stories, I am a God of redemption. I am a God of deliverance. I'm a God who heals. I'm a God who saves. I'm a God who redeems. And some of the stories, the foreshadowing is very specific. And I think it is in the story of Daniel. Daniel is very much a type of Christ. He is very much a foreshadowing of Jesus. For Jesus, like Daniel, left his home. Jesus left all that was perfect and well and good. And he came to this land. He came to this place. And he distinguished himself. He taught. He healed. He loved. He showed mercy. Crowds followed him. People looked at him and said, there's something different about that guy. There's something different about that guy. I want to know that guy. And yet, for all of his goodness, for all of his miracles and all of his love and all of his mercy, there were enemies who wanted to destroy him specifically because of that. Specifically because he was so loved. Specifically because he did such good. And so they began to plot. They realized, there's nothing we can accuse this man of. He's perfect in every way. His integrity is flawless. Let's use his religion against him. And so they went to a king because they didn't want to do it themselves and really didn't have the power to do it themselves. They went to the ruler, a guy by the name of Pilate, made up some charges. And as Jesus prayed, much like Daniel, as Jesus prayed, his consistent discipline of praying, soldiers came and took him away and stood him before a king who really didn't want to sentence him to death. Who really, just like Darius, said, I don't find anything wrong with this guy. I don't want to be in the middle of this. But realizing that his hands were tied, ultimately realizing there were no options, this governor, just like Darius, said, okay, we'll carry out the law. And that's where the similarities end. Because whereas Daniel went into the lion's den and was unharmed, Jesus bore the pain of our sins in his body. And he took the beatings and the crown of thorns on his head. The nails through his hands and his feet. And he was hung on a cross, and for 6 hours, life left him. And he died in our place to tell the ultimate story of redemption. Just like Daniel's life is a story of God saving and God healing and God redeeming, not just Daniel, but his whole people, it points to this story of Jesus who came to redeem us, to set us free. to offer the forgiveness of our sins. And ultimately, all of these stories point to that one spot, the cross. And there are many here this morning, and you have believed that. Remember we talked about that at the beginning? You have believed that. Not just you've said, yeah, I think that's true. No, you have believed it in the sense that with your whole life, your entire life, you have said, I trust Jesus for my forgiveness and salvation and eternal life. And if my very life depended on it, I would still trust Jesus. And maybe somebody's here and you haven't done that. You've heard some Bible stories, you've attended some, or maybe you've attended all your life, but there's never been that moment where you realized, I'm a sinner. I've wronged God. I need redemption. I need somebody to save me and rescue me from my sins. I believe that person is Jesus. And I believe his death on the cross sets me free. Jesus, come into my life and take over. And if you have never done that, this next moment when we start to sing, I encourage you, don't stay in your seat. Come to the front. Let us talk to you about that, okay? We won't embarrass you. We won't make you say anything to the people, okay? We will handle it as carefully as we possibly can. But we want you to know this Jesus who saves, this Jesus who redeems, this Jesus who sets us free. And God, I pray right now in our hearts that we would all examine where we are, whether we think we're believers or not. Help us to examine, have I done that? Have I come to the place in my life where I have trusted everything to Jesus? Not just my religious life, not just Sunday mornings, but all of my life is consumed by this person, Jesus. And if there's someone who hasn't done that, let it be today that they would confess their sin and give their life over totally to Jesus. Thank you for his death on the cross. For as Daniel was saved from the lions, and David was saved from Goliath, and Noah's family was saved from the flood, and on the stories go. All of those stories of redemption are to help us catch a glimpse of what you're trying to do in us spiritually. Redeem us and give us new life. Thank you, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Would you stand? Have courage. If you need to come to Jesus and come to the cross. Mm-hmm.